Around a third of Turks are thought to be under the age of 20. For as long as they've been alive, only one party has dominated the country's political scene, and that is the Justice and Development Party, popularly known by its Turkish acronym, the AKP, or the AK Party. At its helm is the country's president, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, a man credited with transforming what was once an upstart coalition of liberal conservative and modernist Islamist parties into a political machine whose success few parties anywhere in the world could hope to match. That includes Turkey's largest opposition party, the Republican People's Party, or CHP. In last year's presidential elections, it mounted an unsuccessful challenge against Mr. Erdogan. Since then, the opposition has been left divided and uneasy. But the CHP retains a hold on Turkey's largest city, Istanbul, and the capital, Ankara. The mayor of Istanbul, Ekrem İmamoğlu, is seen as the CHP's superstar, and he is tipped to be the party's main man when the next presidential election happens in 2028. But this month, all of the country's cities are up for grabs, as Turks go to the polls again, this time for municipal elections. The AK Party and the CHP present two very different visions for Turkey. That of the former is really a vision that continues a republic remade in Mr. Erdogan's image, more conservative, more nationalist, and with a greater role for religion in public life. The latter is an alternative that seeks to reshape the republic into something the opposition argues is closer to what its founder envisioned, more secular and cosmopolitan. The vote, taking place on March 31st, will help to clarify for many the direction in which Turkey's political future is headed. Welcome to the Year of Elections, a podcast series brought to you by the Opinion Desk at The National. I'm Süleyman Hakimi, The National's opinion editor, speaking to you from our studio here in Abu Dhabi. And this week, we're looking at the Turkish municipal elections. I'm joined this week by David Lepeska, an author and journalist who is also the Turkish and Eastern Mediterranean Affairs columnist at The National. David has many years of experience covering Turkey, and today he'll give us his insights into what's on the line later this month. David, welcome. Can you just start by giving us a bit of background? What exactly is happening on March 31st?
Hello, and thanks for having me, Süleyman. So Turkey's local elections will be held next Sunday, March 31st, and voters will be choosing provincial and municipal administrations across all of Turkey's 81 provinces, and then district mayors for the country's 1,400 municipalities. So there's a lot of separate elections going on. But the main prizes next Sunday will be the mayorships of Turkey's 30 largest cities, which are known as metropolitan municipalities. This list includes all the cities you've probably heard of, like the resort town of Antalya, the port of Mersin, Hatay and Gaziantep in the southeast, and then, of course, the capital Ankara, the Aegean coastal city of Izmir, and the crown jewel Istanbul. These local elections happen every 5 years, as do Turkey's general elections, which choose the parliament and, in a concurrent vote, the president. Those elections took place last year, last May. And it's important to remember that most of the polls leading up to that vote had the main opposition, CHP, the party of Turkey's founder, Mustafa Kemal Atatürk, a secularist party, leading against the governing AKP party. And the CHP candidate, Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu, was ahead of President Erdogan in most polls. But then that's not how it went down. In the end, the AKP won the parliamentary vote relatively easily, and Erdogan beat Kılıçdaroğlu by 5 points in both the first round vote and in the runoff. This result was a shock disappointment for the opposition that left the CHP in disarray. Internal squabbling ultimately led to Kılıçdaroğlu being forced out after 13 years as the party leader. So the new CHP chief, Özgür Özel, he's only been in the post for a handful of months. I think it's 5 months now. And this is his first election as party leader. And what's interesting is that Kılıçdaroğlu is widely seen as having been something of a failure as the CHP chief. But his biggest success was in the most recent elections in 2019, when the opposition took a handful of major cities, including Istanbul and the capital Ankara, away from the ruling AKP. So now the challenge before Özel is matching that performance of Kılıçdaroğlu. And I wrote in my national column a few months ago that it represents the greatest test of his political life. And I'll just close by saying that all eyes are on Istanbul, the biggest prize And this is where the CHP's supposed rising star, current mayor Ekrem İmamoğlu, is running against the governing AKP's Murat Kurum, a former minister of urban development and the environment. Istanbul represents nearly a fifth of Turkey's population and about a third of its economy. And the mayorship there is widely seen as a stepping stone to greater power. President Erdogan himself served as Istanbul mayor in the 1990s. And now in this election, some argue that the AKP chose Kurum, a rather bland bureaucrat, in an effort to make the race more of a direct face-off between Mayor İmamoğlu and President Erdogan.
And I want to get into Istanbul a bit more, but before we do that, I just want to take it back a step and talk about, you know, in most countries, municipal elections, especially mayoral elections, are hardly something of national significance. But in Turkey, they seem to command a lot of outsized attention. So just within Turkey's republic system, why is it that municipal elections are such a big deal?
Well, for one, like kind of midterm elections in the U.S., it's a bellwether. It's a simple bellwether of how the country is feeling about the two main parties, the AKP and the CHP. So if the opposition wins a couple of cities that it hadn't had before, it suggests the momentum is shifting. So that's the most obvious thing. But beyond that, in Turkey, there's a really interesting system. This wasn't the case 30 years ago, but since 2003 and then another change in 2013, the 30 biggest cities, the metropolitan municipalities, which are all over 750,000 people, the mayor of those cities, his writ, his jurisdiction is the entire province. It's not just the city. So the mayors of Istanbul, Ankara, Izmir, other major cities have huge power. And in the cities that are run by the opposition, they often have to deal with some pushback from the national government because the interior ministry chooses each of the governors for every province who are tasked with implementing the national policy. So there's often this push and pull between these opposition mayors and the provincial governors, which has happened in Istanbul and Ankara recently. In Turkey, the mayors tend to have a great deal of power, and these local elections always signal which way the wind is blowing politically.
Yeah, so you mentioned in Istanbul, you know, all eyes are on Ekrem İmamoğlu, who's kind of seen as a rising star in the CHP. But maybe just tell us a little bit about the CHP and the opposition more generally. I mean, the CHP has had a tough run of it lately. There are very high hopes among a lot of Turks who want to see the AK Party out of power, that the CHP would be a kind of white knight. But so far, it's failed to rise to that challenge. I mean, why is that? Tell us about the opposition's experience in the past few years.
Right. I mean, since those 2019 local elections, the previous local elections, when the opposition CHP took a handful of major cities from the conservatives, from the AKP, there has been great hope that the opposition would be able to oust President Erdogan and the AKP, which has now been in power for 22 years, the longest stretch of any party in Turkey's history, 100-year history. And there had been great hope. And leading up to the last year's elections, many believed that finally the AKP and President Erdogan would be forced out of office. But it didn't happen. The main reason I've written about in my columns, many agree, some disagree, is that, strangely enough, Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu, the party's leader at the time, despite several polls that had put him fourth as the most popular potential opposition challenger for president, fourth most popular behind Istanbul Mayor İmamoğlu, Ankara Mayor Mansur Yavaş, and the leader of another party, Meral Akşener, he was fourth. He listed fourth, but then he chose himself as the presidential candidate, and there was significant internal squabbling, which did not become public. And then Akşener, the leader of the Nationalist EE party, publicly denounced the decision and said, threatened to leave the opposition alliance because, I mean, for me, it was an obvious reason. She saw that he was not the most popular candidate to run against President Erdogan. So it seemed very reasonable to not select him. But the party leader, chose himself to run against Erdogan. And then the results were disastrous for the party. And all that hope that had been built up in 2019 and after all these polls that had shown it winning all of a sudden it just all fell flat last May, and Erdogan and the AKP won yet again. And the opposition has since been in disarray. Now, if it is to lose these big cities, Istanbul and Ankara, where there's so much power consolidated, it would likely have to choose another leader. It would likely lose its biggest star, Istanbul Mayor İmamoğlu, and would just have to hit the reset button, basically. So a great deal is at stake for the party right now.
Now, I mean, I think a lot of people understand why Istanbul is so important. I mean, as you said, it's a fifth of the Turkish population. It's the commercial powerhouse of the country. But let's talk a little bit about Ankara. So, I mean, Ankara is where the capital is, and it's where the president sits, and there's a lot of sort of central government power in Ankara. So why is the mayoral election and the municipal election in Ankara so important?
Right, of course, it's the capital, and it's the second largest city in the country. So you have a sizable population, you have sizable economic influence. You're also, of course, where the parliament is and where much of the political activity takes place. It's a huge prize. It's second to Istanbul. The mayor there, Mansur Yavaş, in several polls leading up to last year's presidential election, he polled as the most popular opposition figure. It wasn't İmamoğlu in a number of polls, and I believe I wrote a column about this. He, for a time, I believe late 2002, early 2023, he seemed to be the likeliest challenger to President Erdogan. So that just underscores right there the importance of the Ankara mayor position. Right now, in the current race, he is leading. He is seen as leading the AKP's candidate, Turgut Altınok, by several points, although it could still be a tight race. The main issue there has been corruption. The CHP supporters have asserted that Altınok owns hundreds of properties that he hasn't publicly claimed. And he was recently asked about this at a public gathering, and he said that all property is owned by Allah. So people aren't sure how to respond to him. Ankara is less a conservative city. And so it looks like that's going to go to Yavaş, and he's going to hold that post.
Yeah, it's an interesting feature of a lot of countries, I think, or at least a lot of democracies, that you often in the central government, you'll have one party in charge. And then in the big cities, the opposition parties are in charge. Now that's also the case, obviously, in Turkey. What would you attribute that to? Is it just that, there's a big kind of rural or suburban heartland that the AKP dominates? And why do you think that would be the case, if that is the case?
Right. It's often the case in the U.S. as well. What's interesting is that it wasn't the case in Turkey for decades from the late, not even the mid-90s through 2019, most of the major cities were run by the conservative AKP. And this is largely because conservatives in Turkey asserted themselves economically and politically throughout the 70s and 80s and kind of reached their peak starting in the 90s through to today. You could say they still run parliament, the president, et cetera. And I would guess that to some extent that 2019 vote in which the liberals, the progressives, let's say, of Turkey, of the CHP, kind of pushed back against the conservative reign and retook these cities. The question now is, since the economy has improved little since 2018, I would argue that those 2019 victories were in large part because the economy had done so poorly in the previous year. Starting in 2018, Turkey's economy saw very high inflation, saw currency devaluation, and a number of crises. And so this was apparently in these cities push back against those economic failures, but not much has changed economically in Turkey in the interim. So it's possible we could see some of these cities flip again.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about the AK Party now. So look, I mean, this party, it seemed to have come out of nowhere on the Turkish political scene way back in 2001. It was a kind of, a coalition of liberal conservative parties and modernizing Islamist parties, I guess you could say. And then suddenly, you know, this man, Erdogan, who was the former mayor of Istanbul, took charge of the party and transformed it into this political titan in Turkey. So how did that happen? And what does that say about Turkey's political trajectory over the past two decades?
The oranges of the AKP, Justice and Development Party, are very interesting. So before the AKP was, I mean, you're really going to ask me to go into this? Wow, it's very complicated. You know, the AKP has like 18 founders, and Erdogan's just one of them. The current president, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, served as Istanbul mayor in the 1990s. And towards the end of his run in 1998, I believe, he was sent to prison for having recited a poem that was seen as Islamist, was seen as anti-secular. And at that point, there was a break in the previous Islamist party in Turkey, the Welfare Party, run by Necmettin Erbakan, Erdogan's mentor, with some of the party's leaders wanting to be a bit more liberal and wanting to embrace some elements of secularism, with others wanting to stay committed to Islamism fully. And the former group broke off, led by Erdogan and Abdullah Gül, and other figures who became key leaders of the AKP party, broke off and started the AKP in 2001. And the very next year, what's unbelievable, I don't know how many times this has happened in the world, the very next year, Turkey held parliamentary elections in 2002, and the AKP won those elections. Despite winning only something like 34% of the vote, they got the plurality. They got more votes than any other party, despite that being only 1 year in existence. And they have yet to lose a national vote since then. It's one of the most incredible electoral performances in democratic history. They took power in 2002. The next year, Erdogan hadn't been able to run because he had just recently been out of prison and hadn't yet been cleared to be able to run for political office. He ran the next year in a separate by-election in 2003, became the prime minister, and he has been running Turkey essentially since then.
So, but what does that say about, I guess, where the Turkish population was politically at the time, and the fact that they keep on winning these national polls? I mean, is it that the AK Party has adapted itself over the past 20 years to fit what the population wants, or has Turkey's population adapted to the AK Party's vision for the country? What do you think?
At the time of the AK Party's birth in 2001, 2002, there was a clear thirst for a conservative party that wasn't so extreme as the previous Islamist parties, and they satisfied that desire from the start, and they performed well. Turkey's economy performed very well in the 2000s, so people continued to support them, which seemed totally reasonable. But then, once Turkey hit some geopolitical and economic troubles in 2013, 2014, 2015, the AKP leadership shifted somewhat and began to embrace a more nationalist tone, a more nationalist agenda. And I think Turkish citizens have supported that, have fallen in line with that. They, despite economic troubles over the past decade, they are happy to see their country assert itself more boldly on the international stage. And that's what the AKP has asserted most frequently in recent years. So I guess I would say that they addressed a thirst initially, and then they created it by shifting, by changing their stripes a little bit, and the people responded to that as well.
Yeah, so I mean, the trends you're talking about, it seems to me, are very kind of geopolitical in nature. But when we're talking about municipal elections, you know, I mean, people's concerns are very different, right? Like, is the rubbish collected on time? You know, how's traffic doing? Are they building new bridges? That sort of thing. And how have the two parties, I mean, I guess we'll start with the AK Party. I mean, how have they done on that front, just reaching out to the kind of the ordinary concerns of people in Turkish cities?
Right. The two main issues in Istanbul have been, number one, building safety, which is a major concern in the wake of this devastating earthquakes that struck southeast Turkey and northern Syria more than a year ago. Disaster preparedness is crucial in Istanbul, where experts expect another major earthquake this decade. The AKP's Kurum has vowed to build hundreds of thousands of quake-resistant homes, while Mayor İmamoğlu says he's unsure of the city's vulnerability because the government has blocked his efforts to inspect local buildings. And that's a reference to what I mentioned before, these sometimes clashes between mayors and provincial governors. The other key issue has been public transport, which in a city of 16 million with endless traffic and high inflation, as you might guess, is hugely important. Istanbul's public transport has improved and expanded in recent years, and both of the two main parties have been looking to take credit. Just last week, Erdogan and İmamoğlu both made grand public appearances to inaugurate new metro lines in Istanbul. The AKP argues that the vast majority of new metro lines opening recently, were initiated under its rule before 2019. And of course, there's some truth to this. At the same time, İmamoğlu and the CHP say that it's his municipality that's paying for these new lines. So they're CHP lines. And so they've gone kind of back and forth trying to take credit for the improved public transport in the city. But it's also interesting that you mentioned foreign issues, because there is a bit of that in the Istanbul election, even. The AKP, as I've said, likes to assert its nationalist stance. And so one of the key issues is where Mayor Ekrem İmamoğlu falls on Kurds. The AKP likes to say that anybody who supports Kurdish causes is propaganda for terrorists. And so İmamoğlu's in this tough position of he can't really support Kurdish causes, then he can't stand against them because he'll lose those crucial Kurdish votes. At the same time, for the AKP, they risk losing votes to the New Welfare Party, the latest iteration of Turkey's Islamist party, which has taken a stronger stance on Gaza than the governing party, and argues that Turkey's leadership should do more to help the suffering Palestinians in Gaza. So there are some international issues at play here.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, that's a good segue into, I suppose, one of the undercurrents of this election, at least in Istanbul, which is that some people see it as a kind of proxy election, or proxy pre-election for the next presidential race, which is going to happen in 2028. Could you tell us a little bit about that? I mean, you alluded to it earlier when you talked about, Kurum being run as a kind of a slightly blander candidate than the AK Party might have otherwise run. But just tell us about that dynamic.
Right. The key, of course, is Istanbul Mayor İmamoğlu, who in 2019, March 2019, the initial previous vote for Istanbul mayor won just by a nose, something like 12, 13,000 votes. And so they did a redo. And in the second one, he won handily by nearly a million votes. And since then, he's widely been seen as the rising star of the opposition, even of Turkish politics, and the most likely to seriously challenge President Erdogan. But now the cards may be stacked against him with this untested CHP leader, reports of internal squabbling and a divided opposition running multiple candidates, and this supposed brain drain that's likely more CHP supporters than AKP. So if he were to win, he would certainly be in the pole position to become the opposition's challenger to Erdogan or whoever is going to run in 2028. If he were to lose, he could end up being the next CHP leader, because the CHP would probably have to choose a new leader. It would probably have to hit the reset button. Like I said before, it would be in total disarray. So I wouldn't take their next challenger very seriously. Nobody would see their next presidential challenger as a serious candidate, at least not until 2027, 2028, when they had a chance to recover. On the other hand, just a few weeks ago, President Erdogan said that this would be his last election. Many observers aren't sure what to think of that. He recently turned 70, so it's possible he won't run again. Many think he will run again. So we really don't know either of the candidates in the next election, next presidential election in 2028. I would bet it will be Erdogan and some possibly as yet unknown opposition candidate.
But that's what's interesting, you know, is Erdogan saying that this would be his last election. I mean, it's rather cryptic, isn't it? Because he's not, I mean, he's not running in this election. So, you know, I mean, what's implied in that, I suppose, him saying that this municipal election is his last election?
It's an admission, first of all, that whenever the AKP runs, Erdogan, President Erdogan, is running. He is the main figure. He is beloved across the country. I mean, he's run the country for 22 years now. Actually, this month, marks 21 years in power. So he likes to use that national support, broad national support. He's widely thought to have just a hardcore base of 38 to 40%. So he thinks that whenever he gets involved, the AKP will get at least that much support. And then the rest is kind of on the candidate and on the latest news and the direction of the economy and so on. So he likes to wade in and get involved. The reason I think that he said that this is his last election was just to generate a little bit more sympathy, because he knows of how much so many voters love him. So if he's to say this is his last election, if they're never going to get another chance to express their support for him electorally, that might just drive out a few more thousand voters in support of Kurum in Istanbul and other AKP candidates elsewhere.
Yeah, with President Erdogan, one of the more intriguing aspects of his life, or his origin story, I guess you could say, is that he was born in a very working class area of Istanbul. And a lot of people say that, you know, his popularity in Istanbul is still driven by the working class. At the same time, Turkey's, you know, it's had some serious struggles in the past few years economically. And that often hits the working class harder than most. So how do you kind of, you know, square that circle of the country going through such tough economic times, but the AK Party still kind of somehow being seen as a party of the working class?
That's an interesting question. That is true. Erdogan is from Kasımpaşa, kind of a rough and tumble neighborhood of central Istanbul. And his party certainly gained its initial support among the working class, and it worked with grassroots outreach throughout its early years. Some might argue that it's become more of an upper class party, an elitist party in recent years, as so many conservatives have taken positions of power and influence in Turkey. But I would say that Erdogan maintains a great deal of support among a lot of the working class, let's say the conservative, more conservative working class of rural areas, because it's more of like an almost kind of religious fidelity now. They believe in him. They believe that he is the leader for Turkey. He has yet, in the eyes of many, to steer Turkey in the wrong direction. Yes, the economy has gone through some troubles lately, but Turkey is powerful militarily. Turkey has a strong voice in international affairs. Turkey has been asserting itself. So they see in him a strong leader for Turkey. And that's kind of echoes the model of sultans or Atatürk, the country's founder, you know, a strong man leader who asserts strong leadership and is defiant in the face of troubles such as these economic troubles. And they just still believe in Erdogan's ability to steer the right course for Turkey.
Okay, I'm actually going to ask you one last question, which is, you know, Turkey's a young country. I mean, not the state itself, obviously, it's a very old country, but demographically, it's a very young country. And, you know, one of the more interesting aspects of its demographics is that I think about a third of the population has only ever grown up in an AK Party world, so to speak. But what impact do you think that has on electoral politics in the country? Is there a generational divide, which you often see in a lot of places? You know, younger generations are more kind of, you could say, progressive or left wing, whereas the older generations more right wing. Does that play in Turkey at all and affect the way that the elections are panning out?
It does seem to be. The especially in the cities where more progressives, liberal-minded people tend to live. As I wrote in my latest column, there has been a wave of younger voters. I mean, you mentioned these people who have known nothing but an AKP-run Turkey. Anybody under, 21, 22 years old, literally has known nothing but that. And the numbers of high school graduates, the graduates of the best high schools in Istanbul, I would guess the numbers are similar for Ankara and maybe even greater for Izmir, which is kind of the secular holdout, a CHP stronghold. But the numbers of high school graduates, graduates of the best high schools in Istanbul, literally it's like seven times as many are now moving abroad after graduating to go study abroad after graduating from high school. It was 3%, for instance, for Galatasaray just 5 years ago, and now it's 33%, 35% to be exact, more than a third. But previously it was three out of every 100. That's an incredible increase. So it seems that there's more dissatisfaction with the current way Turkey has been run in the cities right now than there was 10 or 15 or 20 years ago. Now, is that an expression of dissatisfaction with the AKP? We can't be sure. Is it an expression of dissatisfaction with the economy generally? It's hard to know, but I think that the results of these elections will reflect that a great deal.
That's all for us this week here at the Year of Elections. A special thanks to our guest, David Lepeska, and to our producers, Arthur Edison and Doa Farid. If you enjoyed this podcast and want to keep up with future episodes, you can find us on your favorite podcast app and hit subscribe. And if you'd like to leave us a review, we'd appreciate that too.